from Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. And we're going to talk about, if not my favorite topic, one of my favorite topics, which is barbecue and home cooking and meats and threes and places where people can go together. We have, I'm joined by my buddy and John Sheldon Reed, if I call you the local barbecue expert, it's defaming. I mean, it's just not. He is a local boy who is a national, international expert on barbecue, and we are here together to talk about a brand new book written by an Atlanta journalist named Jim Ockbooty. Is that close?
That's good. You really nailed it.
Welcome.
That's excellent.
You were a reporter for the wonderful Atlanta Journal for 30 years. You've written a lot of stories and another book about an important topic that sometime I hope you'll come up and talk to us about race. And I guess when we talk about your new book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America, we will have to talk about race a little bit, won't we?
Of course we will. It's all intertwined with it. It's the most American of food, so of course race is intertwined with it because it is with America. So, yeah, this book is Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. And let me tell you real quickly what it's about. You know, the woods are full of barbecue books.
Sometimes we use barbecue books to cook our barbecue if we don't have enough wood.
It's kindling, yeah.
It's kindling.
Well, this is coated stock, so you wouldn't want to do that. There are probably some oil derivatives in there. But this book started out as the companion volume to an exhibition that has been at the Atlanta History Center Museum for the last almost a year and a half. I was the guest curator for that show. John was one of the advisors for the show. It is the biggest exhibition that's ever been put together about the culture and history of barbecue in America. And this book went along with it. This book is not like a lot of other barbecue books. It's not a travelogue. It's not really a cookbook. It's not a pictorial history. It's got elements of all those. It's got 50,000 words of text about barbecue. It's got 208 illustrations, mostly vintage art, old Library of Congress things, lots of really fun retro advertising from magazines in the 50s and 60s. And there are 26 recipes in it, mostly illustrative recipes.
Something from our guest host, John,
yeah.
you, with his permission, I'm sure, told us how to cook pork shoulders.
And, yeah. Well, listen, despite the fact that some of my stuff's in it, I want to say and that it's a great book. It's a terrific book. I read it in proof. I read it actually in manuscript. And this is a must. It's a central book for anybody that's interested in barbecue. This show in Atlanta is also astonishingly good.
The show
ends at the end of September. It's going to be running until September 29th. They extended it for 3 or 4 months.
So you go, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, that's right.
Better hurry.
Well, what we ought to plot is to persuade one of the great museums up here to work out a deal. I don't know whether
I think that would be a wonderful idea. The original idea was that it was going to travel around and it was going to go to different museums. The Chicago History Museum had already signed on to it. And then this has been percolating a long time, this show, and I think the recession kind of blew some of that out.
Mm-hmm.
But it is funny. There's a lot of North Carolina in that exhibition and in this book. There is a old chopping block from Skylight Inn in Aiden, North Carolina, that is in a museum gallery in Buckhead in Atlanta. And it is there because you cannot tell the history of barbecue in America without something like that from North Carolina. And I particularly knew the resonance and importance of a place like Skylight.
I wanted that there. I was impressed and appreciative that you featured the Skylight and the family, at least three generations and family.
The Joneses.
The Joneses and a little bit of, just a little notice that Sam had opened a not so typical, but wonderful barbecue place.
Well, Sam's got beer at his new place,
yeah,
and his preacher dad, he wouldn't let him do it. Sam actually, you know,
I've introduced it. Most people, a lot of people in Chapel Hill do know about the Skylight Inn, and but you tell them about what you found out and why you featured it in your book.
Well, the Skylight Inn is probably the best-known whole hog traditional Eastern Carolina barbecue place in America. And the tradition of that family making barbecue over there goes back well into the 1800s. The Skylight Inn itself has only been there, you know, I don't know, 60, 70 years, something like that. But it's a very well-known place. And the reason I really featured it in there, besides the fact that I really love it, is what it represents. It is, I think, among all barbecue places in America, it is the best representative of the oldest barbecue traditions in America. Cooking a whole hog and putting a spicy vinegar sauce on it that doesn't have tomato in it, that's the throwback to what barbecue was originally on this continent.
Does it matter to you whether or not it's cooked over wood coals?
Yeah, it does matter to me. John and I spent an awful lot of time talking about this. I mean, traditionally barbecue is cooked over the embers of hardwood. If it isn't cooked on that, it is somehow less traditional. Now, I will say that the majority of barbecue cooked at barbecue restaurants in America today is not cooked entirely on wood. The majority of it's probably cooked on dual fuel cookers, gas hybrid. Southern Pride is a company that makes the most popular one. Old Hickory makes one. And my experience with those is that they are only as good as the person using them. If somebody knows how to use it and knows how to get a lot of smoke flavor in there, they can get great barbecue.
Well, how do they get smoke flavor?
Because they put wood in there.
Yeah, may I speak to that?
Yes, you may.
I am the eminence grease of an organization called the Campaign for Real Barbecue. You can check us out on the web at TrueCue.org. And we're devoted to wood cooking. We honor places that do it entirely with wood, but we don't deny that you can cook really good barbecue. In fact, barbecue is good as that.
With the help of either natural gas or even electric? Can you have an electric?
I suppose. But, you use it for ignition. You use it to keep the temperature steady. But you're cooking basically mostly with wood. And the gas has a minor role in this.
Well, the gas does provide a lot of heat, and it varies on how people use it. One of the last times I saw John, he and his wife Dale were coming through Atlanta, and I took them to a place I like a lot in Decatur called Community Q, and they were having an off night. Whoever was using the smoker that night was not using as much wood. They weren't putting as much wood flavor in it, and I was embarrassed for John and Dale to be there that night because it wasn't as smoky as it usually is, which, you know, all barbecue places are somewhat erratic. Mm-hmm. It is by definition a flighty kind of art form. And I think that, whoever usually does the smoker at Community Q, the gas hybrid smoker, uses more wood than they did that night. They were having a bad night, yeah. and I was embarrassed for Atlanta for the Reeds to be there.
No. Well, one of the things about using gas is you usually get more consistency with it. Keith Allen, who ran Allen & Son here in Chapel Hill, and just recently, to my dismay and everyone's distress, closed his place, retired. Keith said one time, you get varied results with cooking with wood. He said 10% of the time it's no good, and 10% of the time it's so good you wish you knew what you'd done. And what you do is you just try to keep the bad days to a minimum and hope that the average is high. And he's right about that.
But the irony is that even with these gas hybrid cookers, it's variable. Yeah. You can have more consistent heat with the gas part of it, but if you don't know what you're doing there, you can have some pretty mediocre barbecue. On the other hand, you have a place like Joe's Kansas City in Kansas City, Kansas, which has one of the finest pork sandwiches in America. They cook on a gas hybrid Southern Pride.
That's a great place.
It's a great place. They know
what
they're doing.
We're not going to give them a certificate saying they cook 100% with wood, but I'd happily eat there any day of the week. Yeah.
One of the things that you all haven't mentioned, I encountered this weekend. I had a lot of barbecue this weekend, and in discussing it with one of the cooks, this idea that it's not always going to be good. He brought up something that I had thought of, and he said, sometimes you just get a bad piece of meat.
Well,
there's not much you can do about it.
There is that. But before we get off the subject of cooking with wood, the sad thing, and the reason we have this campaign for real barbecue, is that throughout the Carolinas, people are giving up wood altogether. They're not even using wood chips just to add a little smoke flavor to it. I mean, the majority of barbecue cooked in North Carolina today is cooked entirely over gas or electricity, no wood involved at all. Some of the oldest and best known places in the state do that. I'm not going to name and shame them, but they know who they are and they know what they can do about it.
And oddly enough, in Atlanta, we've had a renaissance of wood. There are a lot of new barbecue places that have opened, and a lot of them are doing 100% wood. I can't think of too many places in Atlanta that don't use at least hybrid with gas, with wood chips and all that. I don't know too many places that cook entirely on wood. But I know one very famous place in Georgia that cooks it. There's one very famous place south of Atlanta in Georgia that cooks entirely on gas. But again, I'm not going to name and shame.
All right, well, we better take a break. If you join us late, our friend John Reed and I are visiting with his friend, Jim Ockmoody, and we're talking about their favorite topics and one of my favorite topics, barbecue. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My co-host is John Sheldon Reed, well-known in the Chapel Hill area and across the world as an expert on barbecue, and everybody's forgotten that he was a distinguished Keenan professor.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the days, and also a nationally known and best-selling author, along with your wonderful late wife, made you who you are. But we're happy to have your friend from Atlanta, Jim Ockmoody.
Ockmoody.
If I get this,
you're starting to struggle.
I mean, it's a wonderful name, and one that all of us have got these ordinary names. Wish that we had something that would distinguish us from, and you got it. And then you have to deal with those of us who can't altogether get Ockmoody.
Well, it took me a while in kindergarten to get the hang of it.
Well, we've been talking about barbecue, and one of the things, that particularly with John Sheldon Reed with us, we wanted to talk a little bit about how the barbecue is prepared and the importance important discussion point of using wood to cook. But your book, Smoke Lore, assumes that there's some smoke coming from somewhere in connection with barbecue. Where did barbecue come from anyway?
Well, barbecue is, about the oldest cooking technique there is. People have been cooking with smoke and fire since cavemen. And almost every culture in the world has some variation of this. So it you cannot say that Americans invented barbecue. What you can say is that when the European explorers came here and discovered the indigenous people and the Indians in the Caribbean cooking on this contraption, this framework of sticks that the Spanish heard as the word barbacoa. What came about in that in the New World was a very distinctive barbecue culture that developed particularly in America and is the most distinctive barbecue and grilling culture in the world. I think there are only two other countries I can think of in the world that have any even approaching us in the importance of their barbecue culture, and they're not anywhere close to us. It would be Australia and South Africa. But it became a real thing here. We didn't invent this type of cooking, but we imbued it with a lot more importance. The central point I have in the book, really, is that barbecue, not apple pie, deserves to be considered the most American food. Yeah. It represents us better than any other food.
May I say there's a widespread belief that it isn't barbecue if it's not called barbecue. So Jim's absolutely right that low and slow cooking is virtually universal.
Well, you all agree, I think, that this has its origins from the time when the Spanish met the natives,
that's where the word comes from.
The name
the
has
word, but not the. But not you're not arguing that the process of cooking over wood.
Oh, Lord, no.
Was something special
The name barbecue came from, it's believed it came from Columbus's second voyage when the Spanish sailors saw the Taino Indians cooking on the shores of Cuba. They were cooking fish and iguana on this framework that came to be called a barbacoa and then got anglicized as barbecue. And then our particular American take on barbecue really didn't happen until the mainland of the United States, particularly the Carolinas and Virginia, start getting settled, and you start having the Europeans introduce cows and pigs. You know, there were no pigs in North America until DeSoto brought them.
And cows, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were cooking the proteins they had. The Indians were. They were cooking iguana and fish and things like that. They didn't have pork to cook.
Did you ever try barbecued iguana?
Iguana? No, I've seen the pictures, though. There are drawings, actually, of Indians cooking lizards and fish. And various, I have to say, if I can plug a book of my own called Holy Smoke that Dale and I wrote, we have pictures
great
in there. We got a picture in there from a Greek.
Which is now available in paperback.
It is.
Been selling without interruption for 12 years.
Since 2008.
Yeah. Thank you for that testimonial. But we've got a picture in there of a Grecian urn that shows some people cooking over wood. You know, we've got a picture from a medieval manuscript that shows monks cooking over wood. This is not
The confusion
new.
Is that when you assert and teach us where we believe the word came from, that to believe that barbecue really originated in a special to the American continents when they were cooking over wood other places.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, our particular take on it's very...
What's different about what we do and why is it specially American?
Well, number one, the word came about with the New World, and I think that that's very important.
All right.
I think what John said about it ain't barbecue unless it's called barbecue is actually right. but the whole idea of cooking proteins like pigs slowly, indirectly over coals, and then building a whole culture around it, which is what happened here in the colonial times and the antebellum times, where it became, what happened was barbecue just intertwined itself with America. I mean, the place where I really start the story in smoke lore is in 1793 when the U.S. Capitol building is being, they're laying the cornerstone for the Capitol building. And George Washington, the first president, who has already been to a number of barbecues in colonial Virginia, he hosted a bunch of them. He oversees the Masonic ceremony for the laying of the cornerstone, and then they celebrate with a big barbecued beef. And so it's right there at the birth of the Republic. By that point, it had become thoroughly...
Well, John's got a story made me about the barbecuing of an ox down in Wilmington before the Revolution. The attempted barbecue.
The great barbecue, the Wilmington barbecue. The royal governor, trying to placate the unruly colonists, had a barbecue, but the local Sons of Liberty came and they threw the ox in the river and poured the beer out. This was 8 years before the Boston Tea Party, which gets all the publicity. But I was going to say, what George Washington was eating was barbecue, but they were basting it with salt water and lard or butter. You know, what we recognize as barbecue actually has this vinegar and pepper sauce on it. And what they found in the West Indies were these Indians that were cooking on this framework were basting this meat with lime juice and hot peppers. And, you know, you don't have that many lime trees around here, so you substitute vinegar for lime juice, and there you are. You're all of a sudden, you're at the Skylight Inn.
You would, question for both each of you, if it's not basted with a particular kind of sauce? Is it still, if you don't baste it at all, can it still be barbecue?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Short answer.
I mean, you can draw certain traditions through sauces, and I think what John was talking about with this Caribbean sauce and then sort of doing a version of it in North Carolina, I think that that's very valid, but I think what you put on it is not as important as how you cook the meat and the event that you create around it.
Pete Jones at the Skylight Inn said it's barbecue before the sauce goes on it, and you know, it is.
That's, well, did either of you all ever just go and asked to sample the barbecue without the sauce?
Yeah.
I've been offered it when I've been back in the pits. They say pick.
But restaurant critics, when they're trying barbecue, always ask for the sauce on the side because you want to taste the meat before the sauce gets in there. And then you can put the sauce in there, but you want to taste the meat first because that can give you an idea of that tells you a lot about how it was cooked and how much smoke it has in it and whether it's dry. You can hide a lot of dryness in the meat by putting sauce on it.
Yeah, they do that in Kansas City. Texas is a whole other story. Let's not get into that. But typically in Texas barbecue, Central Texas barbecue, they didn't use sauce at all. They served the meat.
Are they cooking beef?
Well, they're cooking beef. They're cooking pork. They're cooking lamb.
There's a holy trinity. The holy trinity of classic Texas barbecue is brisket, beef brisket, sausage, and hot links, and pork ribs.
Uh-huh.
It's a misnomer that they don't do barbecued pork in Texas. They actually do quite a bit of it. They're just better known for the brisket and the beef.
In Texas, I have a Texas son-in-law, and I tease him. You know, anything that stand still long enough, they'll barbecue. I mean, they barbecue goats. You know.
Yeah, they do.
Well, in your book, you talk a little bit about barbecuing people.
Oh, yes.
Back when barbecue first became a thing and Europeans were trying to make sense of it, there was a tendency to exoticize anything that was happening in the New World. They wanted to make it sound like this was a place that was just full of wild people and cannibals and all that. So a lot of interpretations of barbecue back then have to do with that. And it actually continues well up into the 1800s. The only known mention, I think, in the works of Mark Twain of barbecue actually has to do with cannibals barbecuing people in the islands of the Pacific.
Yeah, Cottonmouth, Massachusetts troops massacred a bunch of Indians back in Cottonmouth's day, and said they were terribly barbecued.
Well, if you join us late, we're talking about barbecue, and we're talking about it with our friend and neighbor, John Shelton Reed, and his friend, Jim Akmudi from Atlanta, who's written a brand new book that we're helping him sell, I hope, called Smoke War. A great book that John says is essential.
It's vital.
Barbecue book collection. The three of us will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Martin. My co-host is John Shelton Reed. So what do you think we're talking about? We're talking about barbecue, and we're talking about with his friend, Jim Akmudi, who is a longtime reporter for the Atlanta Journal and also an author of other book, another wonderful book. But this time we're talking about his new book called Smoke Lore. And Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You come sort of as an outsider in the middle of a state where we have all of these localized disputes about what kind of barbecue is the best. And have you, do you weigh in on, in your new book, about whether or not what we call Eastern North Carolina barbecue, whole hog barbecue, or Lexington?
Let me interrupt. One of my favorite lines of Jim's, not in this book, I can't remember where you said it, but he said, North Carolina should put on its license plates the vinegar state. And our two versions have a lot more in common with each other.
Before we let Jim weigh in on this, the wonderful thing about the book is it's a narrative. I think he said 50,000 words, but there's recipes in there. And you do have the recipe for the Lexington sauce with a little bit of ketchup in it, and you also have the Eastern North Carolina sauce. So you've laid out the differences. Where do you go? Which ones?
Those sauces aren't that different. One of them's a little red, and one of them's not red, but they basically have a lot of vinegar in them.
Well, that's what John Reed says, but they're very different.
He's right.
Anybody else in North Carolina?
No. I want another record. I'm from out of state. I grew up in Tennessee, you know, but they're much more like each other than either one's like anything you find west of the mountains. It's what Sigmund Freud called the narcissism of small differences.
Well, Jim, do you...
Journalists are responsible for a lot of this.
Yes.
Well, you write about it, and so you don't. Are there other states that have these sort of divisions about their barbecue and where they have been. Do they have a South Georgia brand of barbecue?
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of Georgia's a bigger state than North Carolina, both in size and population. And but it is. And 60% of them live in the Atlanta area. Of course, that's one big difference. Y'all got them spread all over the place. Georgia has every place has regions, and I mean, one of the things I discovered. You know, we always think that mustard sauce is a South Carolina thing, and it's mostly right around Columbia. And obviously, they're very well known for it. But in my book, I call it South Carolina Georgia mustard sauce because there's a lot of mustard sauce in Georgia too, and you find it in cookbooks going back into the 1800s. And there's a kind of a weird pocket around Columbus, Georgia that's really known for mustard sauce. The oldest commercial mustard barbecue sauce in America today is Mrs. Griffin's, made out of Macon, Georgia, and it has got a lot of mustard in it. It's a mustard ketchup sauce. It started in the 1930s. So there's sort of a mustard belt in Georgia. The barbecue you find in North Georgia is different in some ways than the barbecue you find in South Georgia. There's a real big difference in Brunswick stew. You know, what's the most distinctive thing about barbecue in Georgia? It's the prevalence of Brunswick stew. We did not invent Brunswick stew. It was probably invented in Virginia, but we are much more identified with Brunswick stew.
Jim, I mean, I'm about to disagree with you. I don't think it was invented in Virginia. I think it was named in Virginia. You know, I think Indians were cooking something very much like it.
Well, I'll agree with that. But what I'm really thinking of is if you're driving down I-95 in past Brunswick, Georgia, going down to Florida, there's a welcome center down there where they have a little monument with a rusty old cast iron pot.
Is that the actual pot where the first Brunswick stew?
And there's a plaque on it that says that the first pot of Brunswick stew was cooked on St. Simon's Island on July something another 1898. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a crock.
Yeah.
Well, is there a
crock? No, it's a pot.
I mean, you give some recipes for Brunswick stew. But you say whether in Virginia or Georgia, I can't remember. But if somebody decided to have Brunswick stew and they went out and killed a couple of squirrels and put it in, and I don't see any squirrels in the recipes for Brunswick stew anymore.
Well, one of my friends in Atlanta, a very noted photographer, Al Clayton, I ran a Brunswick stew recipe in the Atlanta newspaper one time, and I got an email from him saying, that ain't Brunswick stew. There's no coon in it. I mean, it obviously started out as a hunter stew, and they put a lot of different things in it. My father used to do a July the 4th barbecue at this apartment complex where he lived for years, Williamsburg Apartments in Atlanta, and I would help him serve it there. And people would always come by when we were serving the Brunswick stew and say, "Is there squirrel in there?" And my father said, "Well, you know, just anything we ran over."
There's been some evolution. You know, you can get barbecue hash in South Carolina now that doesn't have organ meat in it. Yeah.
Well, Jim, I get off topic, but you're not new to the barbecue world. Your granddad was featured in Saturday Evening Post.
Well, my affinity for barbecue is really twofold. Number one, I'm a veteran Southern journalist, and it's sort of like a requirement to be a veteran Southern journalist that you write about barbecue and consider it part of your culture, and I've certainly done that, taking after Ralph McGill and Tom Wicker and a whole bunch of other folks. But the other reason is my family connection. I'm named for James Robert Ockmoody, my great grandfather in Bartow County, Georgia, who ran a grist mill up there, grinding corn. And he was the community pitmaster. He would do all the barbecues at sheriff's things and churches and all that. And my grandfather, Robert Ockmoody, who we knew as Daddy Bob, he followed after him and was a big pitmaster up there. And it just so happened that in 1954, the Saturday Evening Post did an article about Southern barbecue called Dixie's Most Disputed Dish was the title. And they happened to go to the Uharlee Farmers Club barbecue in Bartow County, Georgia, which my grandfather was the pitmaster at. And the lead photo shows him looking very, you know, very glumly down, you know, very seriously down at the pits. And he's in that story a good bit. And it made him kind of a celebrity in that area. He was in demand to do a lot of barbecues well outside of Georgia.
Ohio or someplace up north.
He was invited to come up and cook a barbecue in a suburb of Chicago for 2,000 people. and which was an incredible thing. And when he got back to Cartersville, Georgia, which was the nearest town of any size, they interviewed him for a feature story in the local paper. And it's a pretty tongue-in-cheek, funny story, but the headline's hilarious. It says, the headline says, "Rebels cook Southern Q in very midst of Yankee land."
This is not Jim's first barbecue book either. I don't know if you mentioned that in the promotional, but he did a book on barbecue sauce some time back that I got a number. I stole a few recipes from one of my books.
I think your version of Lexington barbecue sauce came from our iteration of it. It might have. Dreamland. It was the Dreamland sauce. That's what it was. Dreamland in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We spent a lot of time going back and forth with them trying to replicate their famous rib sauce, and I think we did a pretty good job. Big Daddy Bishop.
He got the recipe, and the Lord gave it to him in a dream, he said, and the Lord hadn't shared it with anybody else since then. Jim's reverse engineered it, did a good job.
Well, Susan Puckett, my co-author on that, really did most of the reverse engineering. She was the food editor at the Atlanta paper for many years.
Well, if you joined us late, we're talking about one of our favorite topics around here, which is barbecue, and we're talking about it with the authors of two of the important books, our Holy Smoke, in the case of John Shelton Reed, and Smoke Lore, in the case of Jim Moody. And the three of us will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about barbecue. Gosh, that's a painful talk in Chapel Hill with Allens and Sons. Now, not so recently closed and learning to live without him, but it's fun always to have John Reed come back from his many travels across the world to where he's lectured on more.
I lectured on barbecue.
Academic topics. We're talking about barbecue. And he's brought with him his friend Jim Ockmody, who is the author of the latest great barbecue book called Smoke Lore. And we're just talking about all kinds of things about barbecue. We've been talking when we were interrupted about Georgia barbecue and your family. Jim's grandfather was a great barbecue pit master. Well, so was he cooking hogs?
He cooked hogs, and he cooked mutton. He cooked other things, but it was mostly hogs.
And did he cook the whole hog, or did he just get shoulders and do it the Lexington?
I think he did both, but in that Saturday Evening Post article, you can see whole hogs.
Excuse me. Well, Wilbur Shirley done it. Wilbur's another great place that just closed, although it may reopen. Wilbur used to cook whole hogs, and he'd throw in a couple of extra shoulders because he thought that made it taste better. So he had hogs with four shoulders.
Oh, is that right?
Mutant hog.
What if you do, if you just get a shoulder? If you buy barbecue around here, more than likely it's
just a butt, which is half of a shoulder.
A half of a shoulder, or something from the shoulder. What are we missing?
A lot of things that Piedmont people say they don't want to eat anyway. You're missing the rib meat, and you're missing the tenderloin, and you're missing the ham is slightly different from the shoulder,
I can't describe the way you look right now, but it is just like I'm painfully telling you that the shoulder is really the best, and the rest of it is kind of. I think a lot of us think that if we can just get a little sample of everything.
I quite agree with you, DJ. I really do. And also in the East, they often chop skin into it, which makes it nice and crunchy.
But the shoulder is the workhorse of Southern barbecue. I mean, that's what, if you go to a Southern barbecue place, whether it's the Dixie Pig in Arkansas or the, a bunch of places in South Carolina or places in, Big Bob Gibson's in Decatur, Alabama. Or
don't forget Memphis.
Memphis. You're usually going to be getting some part of the shoulder. Most places don't cook whole hog. There's been a little bit of a renaissance of whole hog places recently. One of the best new barbecue places in Atlanta is a whole hog place.
Or Picnic.
Picnic over in Durham, or Buxton Hall in Asheville.
Yeah, so there's been a little bit of a renaissance of that, but most places in the South cook parts of pigs, and they're going to cook shoulders more than likely. So, yeah, I mean, people who love whole hogs say that you're missing out on a lot of the complexities of the animal by not cooking the whole thing.
Yep. All right, listen, you've been good to come. You've been good to write this book. But, you say barbecue, barbecue's not a verb, is it? And then you spent the whole last third of your book talking about grilling hamburgers out in the backyard. I mean, that's not really barbecue, is it?
There, when you write about the history of barbecue, you have to have the ability to hold two competing thoughts in your head at the same time. That's a definition of being an adult, actually. And what you need to, I'm an old Georgia boy, so I know very much what the Southern definition of barbecue is and how we don't consider what they put on a grill in Chicago necessarily barbecue. But I'm telling you, a lot of Americans use that word.
Yeah.
When you go back and look at the original stuff that the Indians were barbecuing 500 years ago, it's not that far from what they were doing. Yeah. So part of me has to have an ecumenical definition and realize that if they're grilling tri-tip beef in Santa Maria, California, which is grilled beef to a Southern boy, and they're calling it barbecue, that's what they call it. So by God, it's barbecue.
Let me add that if you're putting on an exhibit in Atlanta, museum exhibit on barbecue, and you want Kingsford Charcoal to sponsor you, you might include hot dogs and hamburgers.
I wish they had been a sponsor, but they weren't.
And they were looking for them, weren't they? And when I was consulting, they had
high hopes for a lot of people.
It is. One of the great American traditions is that a family goes in the backyard.
Yeah, cooks.
And that didn't start from the South. That's one of the things. Yeah. Our sense of the word barbecue has completely changed in modern times. In the 1800s, a barbecue was a big event. If you go back and look at all the digitized newspapers from the 1800s, a barbecue was a political rally, it was a church social, mm-hmm. it was an event. People just didn't, barbecue restaurants really didn't come along until about 1900, and then they really proliferated after that when the highway and the automobile started growing. And then you didn't really have much backyard barbecue. People really didn't cook on decks and patios in the backyard until after World War II. So our sense of the word really changed a great deal when restaurants and backyard cooking came about. And backyard cooking, which is what probably one of the most important things for nationalizing barbecue, started in California.
Sunset Magazine,
yeah, which is kind of like the Southern Living there, although it's a lot older than Southern Living. And it's very much inspired by Mexican ranchero cooking, not by what they do in Texas and in the Deep South.
Where did the Kiss the Chef apron come from?
That was a bad merchandising idea from somebody in 1949, I think.
You actually know.
No, I don't. I'm just making that up. That's what we call barbecue bull.
Okay.
Well, let me ask both of you. John, for John to take the lead, because I'm really discouraged we're losing the family-run barbecue places at what is in North Carolina at what seems to be an alarming rate, in part because of the hard work that goes along, and 7 days a week in many cases.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of them. The Campaign for Real Barbecue, which I mentioned, our newsletter, which is on hold for the time being, but we used to just catalog places that were closing. I mean, it was like a dirge, and some of them closed, some of them switched to cooking with gas, which is, as I say, quite popular in North Carolina. And the sad part is apparently some of their customers don't notice. So that's,
yeah, well, the other part is that that there seems to be an economy and a social order and that doesn't support the families who run these barbecue places or the people who come to them in the same way.
DJ, you know what I'm talking about, but one of the things I love about these family-run places is everybody goes there. I mean, you got the cops, you got the bail bondsmen, you got the lawyers, you got the teachers, you got the guys driving trucks, you got the the whole community is there. And after desegregation, you got black and white there together. I mean, it's
well, I mean, and you bring that into your book as well. There's a mixing of social order.
But there is, but I realize that you've had some losses of really great classic places here in North Carolina, and losing Allen and Son and Wilbur's in the same year is awful, and I love both of those places. But I actually feel that barbecue in America right now is better than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. I really do.
We don't have enough time for you to give a long talk about that. But what do you mean it's better? It's
what I mean is I think that there are more good barbecue restaurants, and there's more of an awareness of classic barbecue techniques now than there has been in a long, long time. It's because of the growth of the competition circuit. A lot of the best restaurants in America now that serve barbecue are people who did well at the barbecue cook-offs and championships. It's because of this great interest in worldwide grilling and smoking traditions and their interest in America's take on it. And I think the other thing is that there's a real interest on the part of a lot of young people in a sort of crafty way, in the way that they discovered good coffee and good beer and good bread.
That's what I'm eating in Brooklyn, is hipster barbecue.
I hate to say it, but it's hipster barbecue. And a lot of the really, Buxton Hall in Asheville is basically hipster barbecue. Yeah. And a lot of the best places that have popped up in Atlanta are hipster barbecue. And you know what? It's easy to laugh at it, but they're interested in doing it in the traditional way, so I applaud it.
I'll say it's really good food. Yeah. It's kind of priced the community out of it. You don't get all kinds of people in those places.
Placement in the postal workers.
Yeah.
Well, what a great conversation. Thanks to both of you. Thanks, John Reed, for coming and helping me pry your buddy to talk a little bit about his new book, Smoke Lore. Jim Ott Moody, thank you very much for your book and for your willingness to spend some time with us in Chapel Hill.
Thank you. I don't think it took much prying, but thank you very much.
And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, Who's Talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.